The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's only Wednesday. Man, oh man. This week feels like it's dragging. I know. I can't win. But welcome to a Wednesday, everybody. A lot going on, as is, well, the case now, because we have a new administration, and they're trying to fix the mess that the last people left. You know, it's when you... tenants move out of a house and they totally trash it. And then, you know, you got to do all the work to get it fixed again. A bad analogy, but it's the best I could come up with at the moment. Yeah, it is only Wednesday. But there's weird stuff going on. One news story that caught my attention that I can't totally explain for you what's going on has to do with... the stock market and GameStop. Now, I know what GameStop is because I have a kid who, you know, used to play video games. I think she still does. But apparently, a bunch of people on Reddit, I'm going to really rephrase this in the most basic terms, because frankly, I don't invest in the stock market. I don't have any money to invest in the stock market. But even if I did, I probably wouldn't, because I don't think the stock market is for you and me. That's for those people that those tax cuts were for, right? They're the ones who play around in the stock market. And despite Donald Trump spending 4 years bragging about the stock market, by the way, it started going up under Obama and just continued under Trump and still continues upwards under Biden. But what's happening now is a group of people on Reddit are playing the market. And what they've done is they took the stock for this company, GameStop, and where a few days ago it was trading at about $4 a share, today it's up around $400. They are totally blowing the roof off of the thing. One Redditor wrote, "I can now write my mom a check and put my sister through Lyme's treatment. This has been a very rough year, but I'm so thankful for every single one of you." So I wish I could explain. Here's how Vox explains what's going on. They're quoting somebody else, a guy named Kokoden, I guess. It says a bull case for GameStop, basically an argument that its stock is good, started showing up on this Reddit subsite called Wall Street Bets about 2 years ago and has off and on been bubbling up. Scion Asset Management, the hedge fund run by Michael Burry, who you might know from The Big Short, I guess the movie, revealed that he had a position in the company, which inspired some confidence. And then Ryan Cohen, the co-founder of Chewy, the pet food company, who I love, disclosed last August that he had a big stake in GameStop. Then earlier this month, he was added to its board. That's been interpreted as positive for GameStop. And then it continues, as Reddit and retail traders started to take notice of GameStop, they also took notice of how heavily shorted the stock was, information that's pretty easy to get. And they figured out a way that if they all acted together, they could sort of screw the shorts over and make a profit doing it. So this person who they're quoting, whose name is Kokoden or something like that, points to a post from 4 months ago starting to plot. Its subject, quote, "Bankrupting Institutional Investors for Dummies," featuring GameStop. And there's all kinds of articles today about it. They're popping up all over the place. There's in Vox and Slate. And Anthony Scaramucci tweeted, "We are witnessing the French Revolution of Finance." Somebody else, Neil Irwin, tweeted, "Trying to make sense of the GameStop thing as a 42-year-old who has covered econ and markets for 20 years, I feel like Don Draper sitting back and trying to listen to the Beatles. then giving up after a short while, confused and discomfited. So I don't understand anything about it, but that's a thing that's happening today. In a moment, I'm going to tell you about another thing that's apparently been happening for a couple of weeks. Actually, today is 3 weeks. Is it 3 weeks today? Since the siege on the Capitol. Wow. In some ways, it feels like a lifetime. In others, it feels like it just happened yesterday. But it's 3 weeks. It happened 3 weeks ago today. 3 weeks ago today, we were just sitting transfixed by the television, not believing what was going on. Well, stories like that often have what are known in the trade as sidebar stories. And there's a great sidebar story that's just nonsensical. But, you know, it's the kind of fun I enjoy to take our mind off of the more crazy things out there, like COVID and the Republicans trying to say, no, just let it go. He's out of office. You know, let bygones be bygones. I'm sorry. Donald Trump incited an insurrection, or as Chuck Schumer would say, an erection at the Capitol. And I'm sorry, he needs to be held accountable. I'm watching this video that, who put this video out? It was a group called, I will tell you in a moment, Just Security. It's a legal website, and they went through, I guess, hundreds of videos on Parler and put together a 10-minute compilation that, you know, if they played that on the Senate floor during the impeachment, I don't know how anyone can watch what transpired and not ascribe guilt to Donald Trump. It's him. He incited the riot, the attack. They all thought they were following his orders. So maybe we'll get to some of that, but we will get to that sidebar story in just a moment. I do want to tell you about our guest today. You know, it's interesting that yesterday, Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, spoke with Russian President Vladimir Putin for the first time as president, right? I know they've spoken before, though not for the last 4 years, for sure. And so this was the first time, you know, Joe Biden today, it's 1 week in office, and he is speaking with world leaders. Interestingly, we got a decent readout from the press office about what was discussed in that call, because that's how a legitimate White House operates. The president speaks with the world leader. There are people on the line whose job it is to, you know, to keep track of what's said and, you know, and write it up. So we have a what's called a readout. Donald Trump was the one who used to rip those things up and take the notes from the translators and the transcribers and say, you're not going to release that. And then put notes in a like a secret locked vault, you know, with for your eyes only kind of clearance, you know, it's like a dictator. So it's nice that we seem to be under democratic rule again, at least some semblance of it. Anyway, the yesterday, again, Biden and Putin spoke for the first time, the two presidents, and we got the readout. And go figure, Biden confronted Putin about things that Trump never brought up. The bounty for American lives in Afghanistan, the hacking of elections. Let me pull out my notes. You know, all the stuff that he hasn't talked about, he brought up anyway. So at least we don't have a president who would love nothing more than to go over to Russia and, you know, be Vlad's best buddy. So it's fortuitous timing for Craig Unger that his book was released yesterday. His book is called, the new book, it's his sixth, called American Compromat, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. So this is a guy who spoke to people from, he does inexhaustible research. He talked to everybody, and Let's just say he doesn't consider the Russia investigation a hoax. So we'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour for the last half hour of the show. And I promise it's a fascinating conversation. And I can promise that because we taped it this morning. So it's already in the can. I spoke to him. It is fascinating. So we will get to that. Before we get to the sidebar story having to do with the insurrection and the riot on January 6th, let me tell you a little bit about what is going on in the news and what's transpired. Yesterday, Rand Paul needs to get a life. Rand Paul decided that he was going to put forth a motion saying that, Donald Trump's out of office, so there's no reason to have an impeachment, because the only reason to have an impeachment is to get a sitting president out of office. Well, that's not true. He was already impeached. Donald Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives while he was still the sitting president. He committed high crimes and misdemeanors. And yes, even though they only charged him with one article of impeachment, there are many crimes this man has committed. But Rand Paul made a motion saying, well, I don't think it's constitutional. So they took a vote. Keep in mind that this happened right after all 100 senators were sworn in as impartial jurors in this trial. And then Rand Paul calls for a vote on a proposal to dismiss the trial, to just do away with it because it's unconstitutional. Impeachment is the only remedy in the Constitution for a president such as Trump, who breaks the laws with impunity the way he did. Still does, by the way. So the argument that it's unconstitutional is bullshit. But there you have it. And so 45 of the 50 Republicans in the Senate voted with Rand Paul. Yeah, I know. It makes no sense. Including Mitch McConnell. Really? Mitch McConnell, where is my, I thought I pulled this clip. Mitch McConnell, the guy who, now I got to find it again. I had this one. That's not the one I was looking for. But you know, Mitch McConnell is also the guy who said this.
You know, you can't win them all, and elections have consequences.
Right. But the other thing that I was looking for is where Mitch McConnell said, and I'm trying to find it as we're speaking here. Yeah, I can walk and chew gum at the same time, much like the Senate can walk and chew gum at the same time. But now I can't find it. Here you go. Here's what Mitch McConnell said on the floor of the Senate.
The mob was fed lies. Mm-hmm. They were provoked by the president and other powerful people.
Yep.
And they tried to use fear and violence to stop a specific proceeding of the first branch of the federal government, which they did not like.
Yeah.
But we pressed on.
Yeah.
We stood together and said an angry mob would not get veto power over the rule of law in our nation.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has said as much there, basically gave his members, his Republican members of the Senate, the approval to go ahead and impeach the motherfucker. Right. But now he voted with Rand Paul yesterday. Five out of 17 that Republicans, that the Democrats need to cross party lines in order to get the 67 votes necessary to convict Trump of the charge that he incited the deadly January 6th insurrection by his supporters who attacked the Capitol. We got five. And so now they're all saying, well, this just shows that there's no way he can be convicted. There hasn't been a trial yet. This is what blows my mind. These people were all sworn in and pledged to be impartial jurors in this trial they're going to sit on the jury for. And then in the next breath, they said, now we're voting to say this is it's moot. this we can't have this trial because, you know, he's no longer president. Well, that's not impartial. That's not impartial at all. So, I nothing is fair. And now you got people like Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine, really? He was the last Democratic vice presidential candidate who's already willing to cave. He said, well, maybe we should just censure him instead. Really? So you want the next Republican who somehow gets elected or steals an election, loses the popular vote, but somehow is able to finagle enough electoral college votes to claim the presidency? You're basically giving them license to do whatever the hell they want. Maybe not early, so early in his term or her term, but certainly for the last month or three, do whatever you want because there are no consequences to be paid when you break the law. When you incite your followers to storm the Capitol and go on a manhunt to kill your vice president or the Speaker of the House or a squad member, how do you say that we don't have to exact consequences for this? If you had a kid who broke the rules, you punish them, not because you want revenge, because you want to instill in them that this is wrong. You don't do it again. And the reason we had Donald Trump, frankly, is because nothing was done to the war criminal that preceded him in George W. Bush. Seriously, if Obama hadn't said, oh, we're going to look forward, not back, and had actually prosecuted George W. Bush for war crimes, maybe things would have been different. You know what? He didn't even have to prosecute him. Just turn him over to The Hague. But we did none of that. We said, Obama said, he's a former president. Leave him alone. He can't do any more harm. He's out of office. Well, let me tell you something. Donald Trump can still do harm because as inconceivable as it is to me to believe, 74 million people voted for him, which just blows my mind. I do not get it. So today in her press briefing, Jen Psaki, who I think is doing a great job as press secretary, and they're having White House briefing sessions every afternoon. There's a guy, I don't know why he's in there every day. I got to figure out how the rotation of who gets to go in the James Brady press briefing room works, because this guy's been there every day so far. He's with the AMI magazine, whatever that is. And, you know, and he asked this question today. And listen to Jen Psaki's answer, because she said exactly what needed to be said.
Finally, this on behalf of a colleague who is not able to be here today due to social distancing. Does the president believe he can attain unity with the 74 million Trump voters while urging his allies in the Senate to hold an impeachment trial after his predecessor has already left office?
Well, the president's belief is that he was elected by 81 million Americans in part because they believed that he was somebody who could help bring the country together, unify the country around addressing the crises that we face. And when he talks every day, nearly, about getting the pandemic under control, putting people back to work, he's not just speaking to people who voted for him. He's speaking to all of the American people, including the 74 million who didn't vote for him.
Thank you, Jen Psaki. Again, they keep throwing around 74 million people voted for Trump. And that's what's frightening to me, that 74 million Americans voted for him, because up until this election that just took place in November, the most votes ever received by a presidential candidate, I don't believe hit the 70 million mark. So many more people turned out this time, both for and against Donald Trump. That 81 million voted for the other guy. You know, I don't want to say the enthusiasm for Joe Biden was so great that 81 million people voted for him. Like me, many millions voted against Donald Trump. I would have voted for my dog Jackson if he was on the ballot against Trump. Thankfully, so far, I think Biden's doing an okay job. I'm comforted both by his style and the substance. I just saw this little image, and I don't have it. I'll tweet it out later. But somebody put together a graphic. It says, Benghazi, Republicans, 33 hearings and investigations over 5 years. Hillary's email, Republicans, 20 plus hearings and investigations over 5 years. Trump's insurrection, Republicans, how dare you investigate us? It's been 3 weeks. Move on already. And that's what they're saying. So the more we see the images coming out of those videos that news organizations and others have taken from Parler and other places, the more we learn from the people who've been arrested, the more serious this all gets. But every now and then, a character from these from an event such as the siege on the Capitol breaks through and makes some noise. And so in this case, who broke through is a woman, not Karen, but a woman named Elizabeth. By now, I'm sure you've seen this video. Hold on, I'm going to bring it up so those watching on YouTube can see the video. But everyone, you can hear it. You should recall this woman, Elizabeth, who came out, was sort of crying.
Ma'am, what happened to you?
I got maced.
You got maced?
By the police.
Aw.
And what happened? You were trying to go inside the Capitol?
Yeah, I made it like a foot inside, and they pushed me out, and they maced me.
What's your name? Where are you from?
My name is Elizabeth. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
And why did you want to go in?
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution.
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution. So that's Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee. Well, Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee inspired a whole lot of very creative people. You know that I spend a lot of time on YouTube looking for funny things to bring to you. Well, I discovered the cult of Elizabeth. So here's one of the first ones I found, and this is, I don't know. Well, I'm just going to let it play and you'll see for yourself. This is the I Got Maced remix from Remix God Suede with Coco Brown.
What happened to you?
I got maced. I got maced. I got maced. I got maced.
Okay. It's got a beat.
They pushed me out and they maced me. I got maced. I got maced.
And the video, for those of you not watching, it's a dance remix. And here comes the line dancing to I got maced. I got maced. All right, so you get the gist, right? So you get the idea. All right. So that's the real Coco Brown remix by the Remix God. Then Extreme Trumpet came in and did his own remix.
I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
And why did you want to go in?
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution.
Oh.
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution. I got names.
Go, trumpet.
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution.
All right. This is the Extreme Trumpeter.
I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee. My name is Elizabeth. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee. We're storming the Capitol. Yeah. I got an ace.
All right, so that's the trumpet guy. It goes on like this. If you do a search in YouTube for I Got Maced, you're going to come up with dozens of videos. This is the gospel treatment.
You got maced.
Yeah, she did it. Come on, take it up.
And you were trying to go inside.
Yeah, I made it like a foot inside, and they pushed me out, and they maced me.
Come on.
What's your name? Trying to go inside.
Yeah.
Why did you want to go in?
Come on, what's your name? Come on.
My name is Elizabeth. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Why did you want to go in?
This is Tampon Carter.
Why did you want to go in?
My name is Elizabeth. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee. I got maced.
She got maced. All right, so that happened. It goes on. This one, personally, is one of my favorites. This is the mini musical from Brandon Etheridge.
Ma'am, what happened to you?
I got maced.
You got maced. And what happened? You were trying to go inside.
Yeah, I made like a foot inside, and they pushed me out, and they maced me.
What's your name? Where are you from?
My name is Elizabeth. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
And why did you want to go in?
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution.
I just love the creativity out there. By the way, Brandon Etheridge not only went, immortalized Elizabeth from Knoxville. He went after the QAnon shaman.
I practice something called shamanism. And in shamanism, they sing, they dance, they drum.
He gets very sick if he doesn't eat organic food. Literally, he'll get physically sick.
They can put anything to music. Okay, so I could go on like this forever, but I won't. Instead, I'm going to share with you this other one. This other one from That Guitar Man from Central Park. He took it a step further. And let me bring this down so you can really get the full flavor here. Take it away, Guitar Man from Central Park.
We're storming the Capitol. It's a revolution.
Come gather round and listen to my story. Every word is true. It's not just oratory. You see, on January 6th, angry MAGA lunatics just raised the bar on idiotic glory. At a rally not uncommon or unique, they all went to hear their orange hero speak. He told them silly lies and incited them to rise, his little army of the ignorant and weak. But among the classless masses there that day, who stormed the Capitol because they didn't get their way, was this little MAGA member who I always will remember, because I can't forget the words she had to say. They pushed me out and maced me. I thought they would embrace me. I'm the party chair of my sorority. But social media is making fun of me, because I told the guy on MSNBC, I'm Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee.
I didn't know that it was treason to be there, so getting mace sprayed in my face was so unfair. You know, it almost made me barf and ruined my new piano scarf. Not to mention what that mace does to your hair. This little white girl, privileged and proud, should have disappeared into that MAGA crowd. 'Cause it won't be long before someone's knocking on her door, 'cause like an idiot she said these words out loud.
They push me out and mace me,
built a case that will disgrace me, but I'm white so I'm expecting leniency. Some say that the legal charge might be for obvious and gross stupidity, 'cause I told that man from MSNBC, I'm
Elizabeth
from Knoxville, Tennessee. Oh, they pushed me out and maced me. Now America, embrace me. When I cry, it's almost cute, as you can see. So the rule of law does not apply to me. But now the FBI wants my identity. So I'll even give them my locality, 'cause I told that guy from MSNBC, I'm Elizabeth. Are you getting this? Is that camera on? I'm Elizabeth from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Woo! That's that good. guitar guy from Central Park. That was just too good. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. See, it's good when we can take small pleasures from the little things. I just love that people are putting that to music. You guys rock. And then the guitar guy from Central Park, he seems to do these live streams that go on for 5 hours. So I appreciate the fact that he did that as a standalone song. It was a good song. Oh, man. All right. It is Wednesday. I told you earlier this morning, we're going to get serious now. This is my serious face. You know, if you're like me, you thought that during the Mueller investigation, you believed the things that Mueller came up with. And you might have been a little unsure why there are so many people ostensibly on the left, too, who are like, no, you know, oh, get over the Russia thing. Well, it was a thing. It's still a thing. Donald Trump would love nothing more than for Vlad to be his BFF. So yesterday, on the day that President Joe Biden spoke for the first time in that capacity with Vladimir Putin, a new book hit the stores by Craig Unger. This is his sixth book. He's well versed on the subject. This one is called American Compromat: How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. Take it away, Nicole and Craig Unger. I'm excited. On the line right now is Craig Unger. He's the author of six books. The newest one just out, I believe, yesterday. It's called American Compromat: How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. Congratulations on the book, Craig, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thank you for writing this. I want to start off by asking, there's a lot of disagreement on what Trump called for years the Russia hoax. And it's not only him and some right wing, you know, crazy commentators who have an interesting relationship with the truth, but many on the left as well, from Glenn Greenwald to Matt Taibbi to Stephen Cohen at The Nation, who say that the whole thing about Russia and Trump is nonsense. How do you react to that?
Well, I'm a reporter, and I say look at the facts. And I've thought of some of the people at The Nation as colleagues for years, and I really don't understand what they're going on about. But what I did for the first time, I mean, we've heard hundreds of times that Trump is in Putin's pocket, that why is he doing this for Russia? The top intelligence officials of the pre-Trump era have been almost unanimous in saying that he's a Russian asset, but no one is really going back to the origins. And if he was a Russian asset, I decided to talk to KGB people and see what really happened. And I go back to the beginning and trace the events that started more than 40 years ago about how they first reached out to Trump as an asset and began to cultivate him.
40 years ago. So when I look back to 2014 and say that Eric Trump is on the record as saying, you know, they've got tons of money. They have access to all this money from Russia. They didn't need any U.S. banks or anything. That was late in the process. They already had the connections, as you said, going back decades. So when did they first make contact with Donald Trump? They targeted him as somebody who might be an asset here in the U.S.?
Well, I report in American Compromat, and it's from discussions with a former KGB agent named Yuri Shvets, that in 1980, the first operation I know about tying Trump to the KGB took place in his first very successful development, the first one that was genuinely a success, which was the Grand Hyatt Hotel near Grand Central Station here in New York. Mm-hmm. And Trump needed TV sets for his hotel, and he bought them. And this is odd because it's a Hyatt Hotel, a blue chip franchise, and they end up getting their TV sets from a little electronic store run by Soviet emigres. And what I found out for the first time was that those Soviet emigres were tied to the KGB. And the man who went to Trump was known as a spotter agent for the KGB. He was there to recruit potential assets, find out if they were worth recruiting. And in selling those 200 TV sets for the first time, he was opening the doors of the KGB to Donald Trump.
So this is a relationship that's been ongoing since then. And this is typical. The KGB would make contact with American businessmen or people perceived to be in positions of power to cultivate relationships with them, thinking that years down the road that they'll be able to use them for something.
Absolutely. And, I grew up, I remember as a teenager, my favorite movie was The Manchurian Candidate. Sure. And you saw this great, great conspiracy and all that. But what was happening here wasn't a 40-year conspiracy of grooming. We're going to pick it in the next American president. Then it wasn't really like that. The Soviets were recruiting very, very widely, and they often went after influential American businessmen. And in fact, a man named Armand Hammer, he died a few years ago, but he was a fabulously wealthy industrialist. He owned Occidental Petroleum, and he had all these special concessions with the Soviet Union. He was known as a special unofficial contact. That's a kind of an asset. There's a distinction between agents who are knowingly tasked with performing special operations and reporting to handlers, and assets who may trade favors. They're trusted, they're reliable, but I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. It's that kind of relationship. And we see that developing out of these events of 1980.
Wow. And so fast forward now to Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the meeting that we later learned about at Trump Tower with Natalia Veselnitskaya and the other Russian operatives with Jared Kushner and others on the campaign staff. If there was such a relationship going back so many decades, why did it seem that these people were kind of ancillary characters, if you will? I mean, why wouldn't it have been somebody who Trump had contact with over all these years who was working with him to try to get him elected?
Well, there were an awful lot of people involved in this, and it went from one episode to the next. If you go to 1987, and I think this is one of the most the biggest revelations in my book is that one of my sources, a man named Yuri Shvets, who was a KGB agent who served in the Washington station of the KGB in the mid-80s, when he went back to Russia, to the Soviet Union, rather, in 1987, Trump had just been to Moscow. And while he was there, it appears he was being cultivated by the KGB and pumped full of talking points for the Soviet Union. And in September of 1987, Yuri was at his offices in Yasenovo, Russia. That's where the first chief director of the KGB has its offices. And he got an internal memo celebrating the acquisition of a new asset to the KGB, who had just successfully performed an so-called active measure. That's really propaganda. And attached to the memo was an ad. And it was taken out in the New York Times, Washington Post, and Boston Globe. And it was signed by none other than Donald Trump. And it had all these bizarre foreign policy talking points that we should sort of get out of NATO. That we shouldn't be so friendly with Japan, which, of course, has been a major ally for decades. And these were the KGB talking points. This was when Trump put out that ad, and he was at the time exploring a presidential campaign. When he put that ad out, it was an active measure for the KGB.
Wow. Now, you talk about, you know, when Trump was first targeted by the KGB to cultivate him as a Russian asset. Craig Unger, what do you mean when you say Russian asset? Are you saying someone who will willingly or unwillingly do their dirty work, do their bidding?
Well, he was willing. I guess I would phrase it in terms of knowing. Was he witting? or unwitting? Was okay. Did he know what he was really doing and who he was working for or not? And Trump, frankly, I think of him as a mobster more than anything else. And he's developed what in legal terms, there's a phrase known as willful ignorance or deliberate blindness. When you just turn the other eye because you don't want to know all the details, it'll just get you in trouble. And that's what you see happening again and again and again with Donald Trump. That at one point, a Russian Soviet emigre who had ties to the Russian mafia and therefore to Soviet intelligence just came into Trump Tower. He put $5 million down and bought five condos. That's the equivalent of $15 million today. Wow. Well, Trump didn't inquire, where'd you get the money? No, he just turns his cheek, takes the money, and in the end, he sells over 1,300 condos under similar conditions. That is, anonymous transaction where the beneficial owner is not known, and all cash, so there's no trace to the bank.
Is that money laundering? I mean, was that the beginning of a Russian money laundering scheme through Donald Trump?
Absolutely. Those are the two predicates of money laundering. To pin it on Trump, you have to kind of prove that Trump was knowing. Well, getting inside his mind, as I say, is very difficult. But he did it at least 1,300 times, and that would suggest, oops, I laundered money. You know, you don't make that mistake 1,300 times in a row. I think that's a pattern.
Yeah, so we're speaking with Craig Unger. His latest book, the brand new one just out yesterday, is American Compromise: How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. We're going to get to some of those tales in a moment. But the book is wonderful. And in the middle, you have a pretty comprehensive photo section. And the first photo that, and there's some fascinating photos in here. The first one, though, is that famous or now infamous photo taken in the Oval Office with Trump, Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov, and Ambassador Sergey Kislyak, which we learned later there were no U.S. Government photographers there. The picture we saw of the very affable, friendly, kind of disturbing photograph in the Oval Office came from TASS, the Russian news agency. It was their propaganda photo. We knew there were problems before then, but was this, when you saw that news story, was that an aha moment? Like, oh my God, what's this guy doing?
Well, that was one, but I mean, the truth is there are many. And if you wonder what does Putin have on Trump, all those discussions with Putin, some in real life where Trump tore up the translator's notes, some on the phone where they stashed the transcript in a secret server that no one has had access to. Well, Vladimir Putin has the real stuff. There were a lot of communications between Trump and Putin, and Russia has those communications. They can hold them over Trump, and I suspect they're very, very damaging.
You know, by the same token, yesterday, the day the book came out, fortuitously, I guess, was the first time that newly elected President Biden and Vladimir Putin spoke by phone during Biden's presidency. And yes, there was an extensive readout released to the media. Biden, according to these notes, pressured Putin on all the issues that Trump never brought up, from the accusations of a bounty, a Russian bounty on American soldiers in Afghanistan, and on and on. This is how it's supposed to be. This is not what we got during the Trump years, though.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how normalcy seems so bizarre now, because we've been used to 4 years of utter secrecy with a president who is an asset of the Russian Federation. It is just bizarre. And there's still a lot of unanswered questions here. And I think one of the things I'm trying to do in this book is show that if we don't get to the bottom of this, if there's not a fully detailed investigation, it can happen again.
Do you think that I don't doubt the desire to launch an investigation on behalf of the Democrats and even the Biden administration? Do you think that such a undertaking will ever happen under the political constraints we operate now? Look, we saw yesterday 45 out of 50 Senate Republicans are saying, no, you can't impeach him. That's unconstitutional because he's out of office, basically saying that any sitting president has free reign to break the law and do whatever they want and won't be held accountable. Do you think there can be in this climate a full investigation taken into Trump's relationship with Russia?
Well, I'm somewhat dubious. I would love for it to happen. But as you say, there are real, real political obstacles. And the midterms are just a little more than a year away.
Right.
Will the Republicans retake Congress? I mean, that's very, very scary. I sure hope it takes place. And as a journalist, all I have is my phone. I don't have subpoena power. I have some wonderful researcher assisting me who speaks Russian. But it really requires a serious investigation, and bipartisan investigations tend to split the difference in a way. But we have to get to the bottom of this. We see how close we came to losing democracy. Biden's victory was wonderful and a major step forward. And so was taking the Senate. But it's still hanging by a thread.
Oh, very much so. So you talk about the initial contact made by Russia to Trump was back in the 80s. Well, that predates Vladimir Putin in terms of being president. I think he was at the KGB back then. But so this has gone on for decades. Now, Trump has had this fixation on Putin. He said, oh, I know him well because we both appeared on the same episode of 60 Minutes, even though they never met. But he's a good friend because they were together on that show, whatever the hell that means. What's with his fixation for Putin? And did he have that same fixation on the presidents who came before him?
Well, I think he kind of wants to be Putin. Putin is a mobster. He really is. And if you look at what has happened to Russia, everyone was hopeful after the fall of the Soviet Union that it would turn into a real market economy. And that did not happen. It became a mafia state. And I wrote about that a little more in my previous book, House of Trump, House of Putin. And there are really hundreds of billions of dollars at stake. When you have a mafia state, a kleptocracy, and all those oligarchs, you have friends of Putin who control entire industries, the coal industry, the energy industry, the natural gas. The oligarchs, you know, have $10 billion and up. They're just enormously wealthy, and they're not about to let that go. And Putin keeps them in reign. So that's what's at stake here. You also have hundreds of billions of dollars in flight capital that's illegal money from a lot of that. And it's been putting going back into the United States. And that, so you see the entire Republican Party really taken over as if it's the Party of Regions, which is the political party in Ukraine that's essentially a pro-Putin political party.
It's astounding. The subtitle of the book is how the KGB cultivated Donald Trump and related tales of sex, greed, power and treachery. And so it's no surprise that a big portion of this book deals with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. How did they play into this?
Right. Well, you know, I think the Maxwell, the Epstein-Maxwell operation has been reported largely as a sex trafficking operation, which it was. But it was also a compromat operation. It was an operation designed to capture the dirty little secrets of the richest and most powerful men in the world. And they really were men. And that meant, I mean, I think one of the reasons Epstein's maxim for recruiting girls was the younger, the better, because he's doing videos of those sexual activities. And if you want powerful compromat, having sex with a minor, with an underage girl, is far more serious offense than just having extramarital sex.
Sure. Sure. So you're saying the KGB also targeted Epstein and his organization, for lack of a better term, and capitalized on his relationship with Trump?
Absolutely. And one of the things I looked into Epstein is where does he get his money? And I found an Israeli agent who told me he saw Epstein meeting with Robert Maxwell. That's Ghislaine Maxwell's father, who is a British press lord who is very, very close to the KGB. And he has the same kind of relationship to the KGB that Donald Trump has. He was they were known as special unofficial contacts, and that meant they would trade favors, and they were part of this enormous really criminal elite that had intelligence ties to Russia and the Soviet Union before it. You also see with Epstein in later years that Russian intelligence seems to have used the Epstein operation to insinuate itself into the tech sector. And they had Russian women who were working with Epstein. One was his publicist for a while. Another ran salons with the most powerful people in tech, in technology, in Silicon Valley, at Harvard and MIT and so forth. Bill Gates was there at various times, Elon Musk. And they were cultivating these people. And we've seen this. We now have this ongoing story of a massive hacking scandal in which the Soviet Union has gotten into our technology.
Right. Yeah. And that's a current story. So this is all, it keeps going. So Compromat, which figures prominently in the book's title, American Compromat, that is the Russian word for, what's the term I'm looking for?
It's compromising material, essentially.
Compromising material.
It's like blackmail.
Exactly.
It's extortion, blackmail. And it loses its power immediately if it's revealed. So it's holding something over your head saying, look, we have all, there's all these photos of you in compromising positions, or we have these financial records that can be devastating to you. It's important that we help you keep them private and not be released. And that way, Trump or whomever is indebted to the Russians forever.
Right. And throughout the campaign, when we learned of that Michael Steele dossier, that figured a lot in the Mueller investigation and thereabouts, and you know, is still a subject of contention. There was the allegation that there was the euphemistically known P tape. Do you know if that exists? If that exists, or what other similar pieces of evidence do exist?
You know, I don't know about that in particular. I know there. I've talked to people, including Russian mobsters, who talk about that. But I tend to think, unless I have it, there's nothing to be done about that. What is clear, they have a lot over Trump. And it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. I think leading up to January 6th, it was clear a train wreck was going to happen one way or the other, but you couldn't really predict when or where or how it would take place. It was interesting. Recently, Hillary Clinton tweeted that she wondered if Trump was in touch was talking to Vladimir Putin in the days before the January 6th insurrection, because that is right out of Vladimir Putin's playbook.
Yeah,
and there were certainly reports, I mean, widespread reports, that QAnon has been supported and fueled by Russia an awful lot.
Oh, wow. Now, is there, I mean, do you have evidence? Do you have things in the book that investigators in the government and the CIA could use to unearth some of this stuff, to fight back against their claims of hoax, as they call it?
I think there's a lot in there, really, and especially going back in history. And, you know, I have only the resources a normal reporter would have. I don't have subpoena power or anything. One of my key sources is an ex-major in the KGB, and he has furnished material to federal authorities. But, of course, we have ongoing wars in and Biden is trying to clean it up right now. But Trump was putting all his people in charge of national security.
Yeah.
And it meant there were internal wars. And if you were in the FBI or CIA, and require damning information on Trump. Well, what would you do with it in that context? What would you, how would you use it? Because you'd put your own career in jeopardy as long as Trump was in the driver's seat.
So if you're confronted by one of these, I don't know what to call them, Russian doubters, you know, the Glenn Greenwald. And I've always been a big fan of Matt Taibbi's, but when he went off on, you know, agreeing that this is a Russia hoax, he kind of lost me there. What do you say to those people who continue to say, stop with the Russia stuff?
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of them, one of them said to me, look, Mueller's failure to come up with anything shows that there was nothing there. I don't think that is the case at all. You know, everything in my book is footnoted. It's real. And there are two ways for them to attack me. One is to disprove my information, and no one has done that that I know of. And two is to say my argument doesn't parse, that I'm overreaching. Well, to me, this is very much like a jigsaw puzzle with 1,000 pieces, and I don't have all the answers, but I may have 800 out of 1,000. And when you look at the picture, there's no other conclusion you can reach other than that Trump was cultivated by the Russians, and this went on over 40 years, and he was acting in the interests of Russia, not in the interests of the United States.
You know, in fact, I mentioned the picture. When you go to the picture section of the book, and the photos are just incredible, and it's a beautiful section. The picture below the one in the Oval Office is of Trump and Putin in Helsinki when they met, and at that shocking press conference when Trump basically stood with Putin against United States intelligence agencies. That should have been a turning point, but are we so divided in this nation that half of the country is going to go along with the guy who stands with Russia over our intelligence agencies?
Well, sadly, that appears to be the case, and it's a lot of it is just shocking to me. And I think you've seen the media in the United States damaged. I hope it's not irreparable, but people live in completely different worlds and have completely different sets of information, or I think it's disinformation. But you've seen Russia fueling it in Facebook again and again. Facebook makes billions of dollars off of becoming a powerful voice of Russian propaganda. I think that's obscene. I think it has to be regulated in some way. I mean, the whole QAnon thing is beyond sick and weird. I mean, these lizard-brained satanic pedophiles, what is going on with that? There you have it in the United States. It's very upsetting.
And you point out, as you did just a few minutes ago, Craig Unger, that, you know, we're just over a year away from the midterm elections, and the Republicans could conceivably take back Congress, control of either or both houses of Congress. Yet you still have a big faction who is siding with this crazy stuff over reality. That's a frightening position to be in. With that in mind, should the Biden administration or the Department of Justice or whoever handles this kind of stuff actually delve into this deeper to expose Trump for being a Russian agent? Do you think that would help set us back on a reasonable course?
I think it's absolutely necessary, but it has to be done very, very carefully. But I think so far Biden has handled it well. I think he has to be above it all in a way because he wants to promote unity. But what I really liked in his inaugural address was he said that's not, he pushed for unity, but he pointed out that is not easy. We also have to have truth. And if you want one word, that's it. That should be the rallying cry, factual reality. And it seems like the Republicans have lost all touch with it.
Oh, without a doubt. Truth. What a concept. The book is American Compromat, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power and Treachery. It is newly released. Read it. It's by Craig Unger, who you can follow on Twitter at Craig Unger. Craig, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And it was great meeting you.
Well, thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And there you have it. Craig Unger, fascinating book, and an interesting topic. And that brings us to the end of another hour. Thank you for being here today. Find me anytime at NicoleSandler.com. The shows are not behind a paywall. You can listen to past shows, too. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. Lots to talk about, I'm sure. All right. See you tomorrow, everyone. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.